I'm Levy Dalton, and this is I'll Drink to That, a bi-weekly program where we get behind the scenes in the wine business. The exclusive sponsor of I'll Drink to That is 750, a powerful and easy-to-use online search tool for wholesale buyers of wine and spirits in New York and New Jersey. 750 incorporates over 100 distributor portfolios and a number of unique features that make the lives of buyers simpler and more productive. One of the features I've been most excited about on 750 is the recent introduction of digital tasting books, which allow buyers to access all the pertinent details they need during tasting season right on their own phone. You know how in the past you've had to carry around a heavy, spiral-bound notebook that was a clumsy obstruction to your interaction at the tasting tables? No longer necessary, bro. With 750's digital tasting book feature, you get access to table numbers, pricing, producer name, wine, and everything else you need to make informed buying decisions, as well as your own place to put any tasting notes that you may need to refer to in the future. Digital tasting books, just another way 750 makes the life of a wholesale buyer much easier. Hey, before we get into today's episode, I wanted to mention, we recorded this one on the go with the travel mic on location. We wanted to get it as real as possible in the place. Sound quality might be a little different than what you're used to. We didn't hit this one up in the studio. Hope you understand.
So I'm here with Mike Collini of Stony Hill Vineyards in Sonoma. Hello, sir. How are you?
Very well, thank you.
And when did you start at Stony Hill?
Well, pretty much about 1972.
Oh, wow. So you got a few vintages under the belt.
Actually, it'll be 40 years this year.
Wow, 40 years.
Yes, of winemaking. I was there for 1 year as a vineyard manager, the first year.
How many other people around Sonoma or Napa have been in one winery for 40 years?
I think they're few and far between. I was talking to Bill Sorensen. He's up at Burgess, and I think he and I are pretty much tied. I don't know anyone else.
And so how did you get to start there? You were working at Sterling before Stony Hill?
That's correct. I made some wine at my grandfather's cellar back in Sonoma, actually, back in 1969 with some buddies. And somehow I ended up being hired by Rick Foreman and Peter Newton at Sterling back in 1970.
Oh, because that's where Rick Foreman used to work.
That's correct.
For Peter Newton at that
time.
Yes,
that's right. He was pretty much the founding winemaker there. And Rick had actually worked at Stony Hill did an internship, I think, in 1968.
Okay.
So he knew Mr. McRae. I call him Fred now. Fred actually is the founder of Stony Hill Vineyard, and he actually told me to call him Fred. So I will use his name as Fred.
And he founded it back in the 50s.
Actually, yeah. They bought it in the 40s, and the first vines were planted in 1947.
Amazing.
Yeah, but anyway, I worked with Rick for a couple of years there, and then I went off to do some work at Stony Hill, and I've been there ever since.
So Rick kind of recommended you. How did that end up happening? Fred was looking for...
Well, it's kind of a funny story. I was actually commuting back and forth to Sterling from Sonoma, and Rick knew Fred, and there was a house available up there, and Fred was looking for someone to kind of caretake or just keep an eye on the place.
Sure.
And he rented me the the vineyard manager's home because he had moved out. And I was living at Stony Hill but working at Sterling, which is only about a 10-minute drive, until the vineyard manager became ill and Fred had to hire a new vineyard manager. And he said, Mikey, you're going to have to move out unless you want to work for me. And I chose the latter.
Yeah.
And I joined Stony Hill in 1972 as a vineyard manager.
So you started working with the vines. And what was it like working with Fred at that time, who was making the wine?
Well, yeah, Fred had an assistant there named Bruce Rogers. Fred made all the original wines from, 1952 until he started to, semi-retire. Although he was retired from the advertising business when he even started Stony Hill. But he hired Bruce Rogers, I think, in 1969. But Bruce decided to leave in 1973, and that's when Fred asked me. Well, you're right. Fred went to Rick at Sterling. He said, oh, my God, my guy's leaving. What should I do? And Rick said, Mike will make some wine for you. So it was thanks to Rick, the guy that I actually left, recommended that Fred hired me, and Fred did. And well, ever since then, I've been there. They can't get rid of me anytime soon.
And what was the first vintage that you made as the winemaker?
Well, you know, I work with Fred, and the first vintage would have been 1973. You know, Fred was, you know, he was there and you know, show me what he liked and the style of the wine. You know, discussed when to pick the grapes as far as sugar, acid, pH balance. For the first, 73, 74, 75, Fred passed in 77. So I might consider myself the winemaker from 1977 on, after Fred had passed. And I worked with his wife, Eleanor.
Sure.
Who was co-founder, of course, until 1991 when she passed. And then their children, Peter and Willenda, inherited the ranch, and now I work with them.
But Peter didn't want to be so much involved in the winemaking side.
Well, back in those days, Peter was still working for Standard Oil Company.
Got it.
Chevron, I believe. So he had not retired yet. So they needed me to stick around, and I was glad to.
Yeah.
Yeah, I live on the property and had my family born and raised there. And enjoyed running the vineyard and making the wine.
Sure.
And it's a great fit for me and them.
And what were those first few vintages like in terms of what were the conditions?
Well, gosh, you know, the first year, 1973, was the biggest crop we ever had. I pruned the whole vineyard myself that year, and I was a little nervous because I thought that I'd overcrop the vines. But it was just Mother Nature, the man up above, however you want to look at it, gave us a great crop. And the wine was perfect, really. I thought it was pretty light and lean and nondescript because I wasn't used to Stony Hill style. But when Fred tasted the wine, he said, "You've got it right." Or we've got it right. And that's exactly it. So he was very pleased because we had twice the amount of wine that we had in the past. And it was perfect. And, you know, I didn't realize it at the time because the wines that I was used to, wines that had a little more alcohol. Of course, you know, we didn't use any brand new wood, where at Sterling there was a little more wood, not much, but some. And other wines that I tasted around the valley were, were more, richer and bigger. But then Fred opened some of the older vintages, and I could see where he was coming from. And I said, "My God, you were right. This is what it's supposed to be." And actually, the 73 is a delicious wine today.
And what was the style of Stony Hill in terms of the winemaking? I mean, what was going on in the cellar then that's still going on now? What was the technique?
Well, really, there's very little technique. You know, we consider ourselves farmers.
Sure.
First and foremost, we want to bring in balanced fruit, clean fruit, and then we don't try to mess with it too much. You know, it's mostly barrel fermented, but we don't buy new barrels. If we do buy a few new barrels, we break them in slowly, so you really taste our soil, the minerality, the natural acidity. We don't necessarily pick grapes that are high in sugar, but we call them ripe because when the acid starts to drop and the pH starts to climb and the sugar is, you know, sufficient, we think the vines are saying, "Come and get it." And that's when we pick. And we barrel ferment, and we don't surly, we don't go through malic fermentation. We try to keep the wine as natural and true to our vineyard as possible. And it's interesting because, you know, the style is the same, and the winemaking is the same, but every year is a little bit different depending on the crop level, of course, the weather, you know, all those factors, which, you know, makes us, you know, not necessarily a formula style wine. It's what we get from our vineyard year after year.
And that vineyard, the vineyard sources are fairly high in altitude.
Yes, I think they range from about 1,000 feet elevation to about 1,500, 1,600 foot elevation.
Do you think that's giving you grapes with higher, or maybe one of a couple reasons that's giving you grapes with higher acidity?
Well, yes, partly, but I think it's mostly because we're, you know, our soil, of course, and the clone helps. We have the old Wente clone, but it,
oh, you do. You have
yes,
the
old Wente clone.
Not so many people today, right?
No, no. It's, you know, it's slightly virus. Let's face it, and you know, I like it, but very much. But you know, certain years, well, generally speaking, we're, the acidity is there because we pick the grapes before we lose it. But you see, we our whole slope faces northwest. So we get morning sun and midday sun, and we avoid the heat in the afternoon sun.
Oh, okay.
So the you know the vines, you know, we have a kind of a banana belt, so to speak, but a temperate banana belt where it whereas it doesn't get really hot up there. So it, you know, it just it's obviously we're close to Calistoga, where I believe it's too hot for Chardonnay, generally speaking, but not where we are because of the sun exposure.
And
day
what,
after day.
What was Fred like as a guy?
He was a fine old gentleman. I didn't mean to say old, but he was 80, pretty much 80 when I met him, late 70s. And he was a great gentleman.
And did you think after he passed, or as the vintages of the 70s rolled out, that Chardonnay was getting more and more popular at that time? Because when it started... you know, releasing in the 50s, the Chardonnay of Stony Hill, there wasn't so many other California Chardonnays around.
That's correct. And, of course, it became very popular, and, of course, it still is the most popular white, I believe, in the United States. But, and it should be, because, it's, you know, it's a great wine, but not all grapes are considered equal. We happen to have, I think, really good grapes. And that's the reason we're able to stick with our particular style, because the grapes speak for themselves. There are some grapes, you know, and I don't mention necessarily any winemakers or areas where sometimes the grapes are a little bit, well, tropical fruity.
Yeah.
And they need to be adjusted with some barrel or some maybe the a little bit of ML fermentation to make the wines balanced. Well, that's, we don't have to do that. We don't like to do that, and we've never done it, because we like, and our customers like our style of wine.
Do they let you know that?
I was mentioned once in 1980. It was after a couple of drought years, 76, 77. I traded some barrels, and a couple of our customers noticed there was a little touch of oak in there.
Oh, they commented on it?
Well, a few of them did, yes, and I thought you weren't going to put any oak in that wine, Mike. I said, well, sorry, Doc. There's just a little touch. I had to buy some new barrels. Okay. But anyway, our customers are familiar with our style. And because, you know, because it's a food wine, it's a wine you can lay down for years if you like. They're used to having a particular style, and we would never change that.
And one of the things that's interesting about Stony Hill is that most of the sales historically have been through the mailing list, as opposed to the kind of distribution system. You know, you guys sell to some distributors, some restaurants, but a lot of it's gone through the mailing list historically. Do you think that's given you a closer read on kind of what exactly your customer is and who they are?
Well, without a doubt, because generally speaking, our wines are more interesting after several years in the bottle, and most of our customers would like to try a bottle when it first comes out. And then, of course, sometimes they lay them down for 10 years before they even try them, which, you know, I think is kind of a mistake in some years. But, for instance, a restaurant can't do that. So it does make it easy for us to stick with that particular style.
Because the people, you know, that they know what they're getting.
Most of our customers and friends know exactly that, hey, you can drink them when it's young. It's pretty good. But there's a little more gratification when you open, let's say, a 5 or 8 or 10-year-old Chardonnay that's just coming around, and kind of impress your friends. Sometimes their friends will say, I thought we were your friend. Why are you opening this old stuff up? And they can be surprised. So it's something that it's kind of fun for our customers. But also, mostly it's just the character of the wine seems to improve. Over age, little by little, it becomes a little richer, more complex. So we're going to stick with that style.
And what was it like during the period of the maybe 90s or early 2000s when other styles were being broadly acclaimed. Was that kind of a rough feeling to see your popularity in the press kind of go unchampioned?
Well, I'm going to be careful what I say about what we think about the press, because actually I read them, and quite often if I'm looking for a particular wine, I will read that and read those, and I will generally speaking pick a wine from what I read from how they're rated on occasion. No, we again, back when I first started at Stony Hill, there was actually a waiting list to even get on a mailing list, and that was it was back in the day where there weren't a lot of Chardonnays. And that we were able to ship to any state, of course. That was another little glitch in our business when we were shut down from certain areas where you could ship direct. It was about 15, 20 years ago. So we lost a few customers. But nevertheless, we weren't about to change our style because, again, every once in a while I would buy a new barrel and I would put the wine in that barrel and I would taste it by itself. And I said, oh my God, this is not Stony Hill. Of course, I would blend that back in with the, but I said, no, it's not going to work for us. It doesn't work for our grapes. It will not work for our customers. And more power to the people who were getting and doing very well with their big buttery style wines. And I think there's a place for those wines. Obviously, there is, but it's not our style.
And when do you usually recommend starting to open a bottle of Stony Hill Chardonnay? What would make sense in terms of really starting to get an appreciation of the wine?
Well, generally speaking, if I was to buy a case, I would, the minute I got it, I would open a bottle. But maybe one bottle a year, and see how it's progressing. But a lot of our friends wait 5 years before they even try it because they just know. And not every year is going to do that, but generally they all do. We went through we had a period of time where some of the wines did not hold up.
What was that roughly?
That would have been, let's see, in 1986 we had to tear out, excuse me, our original vineyards.
I see.
We called number one and number two, and they really made the best wines. They were planted in the 40s, but they started to decline. And being dry farmers, a vine had a little Pierce disease or a little Eutypia, and we tried to replace it. It was very difficult to replace a vine with its all their big brothers taking up all the moisture and nutrients. And finally, enough of them were kind of going to the wayside. We decided to tear that vineyard out. Subsequently, the 87, 88, and 89 did not have any of the old original fields, which two things happened, I believe. And those fields are the best fields, but also the fact that their age at that point was well planted in 47 to 87. They were really in their, well, the end of their prime, but they really produced the most interesting fruit. And those wines, the most longevity as well. What they had is kind of what I call a delicate power. Even when they were young, they had the viscosity in the finish that, well, just pretty much unparalleled in Chardonnay in Napa Valley. But we replanted them in 87, and about 93 and 94, 95, they came back into production. Now those wines are again holding up a little better. But the 87, 88 wines, some people still like them very much. They just kind of went south, in my opinion, before the rest. Whereas the 63 and 64, 65 Chardonnays are still young and delicious.
Which is kind of a rare thing to say
Well, it's very rare, yes, there's
for
no doubt.
California
Yes,
Chardonnay.
California, yeah, I think there's not very many that would do that. I'm not sure there are any that from 64, I'm not sure who else was making Chardonnay then.
And what is the vine age now on average for the
I
Chardonnay?
would say 20 to 25 years now, yes.
And you make some other grape varieties. You make Riesling. What's that like?
We make a Riesling, yes. We made a Riesling back in the old days. It was bone dry, but when I first started, we decided to put just a little teeny bit of residual sugar in it. So it's more of a German style. It's not very sweet. It has less than 1% sugar that we pick at, maybe 21, 20, 22% sugar. So the acids are very high and the pH is very low, and I stop the fermentation around 1%.
Okay.
So it has a little bit of perfume, a little bit of flower, and a lot of riesling character. And it ages very well, but it's the people in the Panhandle all along Texas to Florida, they call it their summer sipping wine.
Okay.
But it's actually a very good food wine as well, with certain types of cuisines. We love it with Dungeness crab, of course, but there's certain other foods that it really goes well with. It's very popular.
And recently, you also planted some Cabernet.
We did plant some Cabernet. We have a one field on the very top of our vineyard, up about 1,600 foot elevation, that has a different slope. It actually it faces southwest, and we had Chardonnay up there, and we didn't like it. So we put in 5 acres of Cabernet, and it's doing very well.
And
It was planted in 04, and the first real crop off of it would have been 2009, and we've just currently released it.
And what's it like working with Cabernet again?
Well, I love I'm a Irish Italian. You have to have a little red wine around, and I and of course Cabernet is king. Let's face it, in Napa Valley, and it's a lot of fun. You get to have your hands turned red at the end of the season like they used to. And there's a lot of foods that we like that you have to have a glass of red wine around.
Now you can have a few more steaks at dinner with your wife.
Oh, yeah, and pasta, whatever that the Italians and well anyone really one of my favorite sayings is man cannot live on white wine alone. So Cabernet is what we chose to plant up there, and it's actually doing very well.
And that's one of the changes at Stony Hill, but what have been some of the changes in the area in general? I mean, over 40 years, what have you seen in the broader zone that's either surprised you or that you just took note of?
Well, a lot of people came in that had visions of grandeur, and they planted certain varieties because it seemed to be a popular variety. But they didn't plant them in the right places, and the wines did not do well. For instance, Pinot Noir in certain areas where it was way too warm, because it was very popular, say 25, 30 years ago. It was up and coming, and still is, but people have found out, as our compatriots in Europe found out many years ago, that there's certain areas you don't grow certain grapes. And in Napa Valley and Sonoma, they're figuring that out little by little. And I think the wine quality has gone up manyfold because people have figured out where and where not to plant certain grapes. On the other hand, a lot of this bigger is better has taken over some of the industry, and it's something that Stony Hill won't get involved in. For instance, our Cabernet will be. It's more of a restrained style. It's going to be a food wine, not necessarily. We keep the alcohol below 14% generally. I mean, it could get close, but a lot of the new wave winemakers are making wines that are, higher in alcohol, and very delicious and rich, but not what we consider our style.
And. How what is the total production of Stony Hill in terms of cases from a year to year basis?
Well, again, we're we're faced with weather conditions because we're dry farmers. Again, we don't make formula style wine, so it depends on the year. But I would say, generally speaking, we do about 5,000 cases. Very small.
So that's pretty small.
Very small.
And you're still owned by the same original family.
That helps.
You think that if it had gone corporate, it probably would have expanded in case size?
Well, I think anybody who would have to pay the price what it might be worth today,
yeah,
would have to, unless they just were having too much fun and didn't care about making money. But it would be problematic because I think most of the really plantable land, there's 40 acres planted on a total of 160 acres, and we could probably double that if we wanted to. But it wouldn't be the best soil in the best areas, and we might have some erosion problems, or maybe have to irrigate, and it would change everything.
And a lot of that other area is forest.
Yes, it's very forested. We have a lot of oak and madrone and redwoods and Douglas fir. Big forest. We're on the Spring Mountain side, so there's a lot of moisture in the soil, so there's very big forests.
Are there other winemakers that have inspired you along the way in the same or even to some degree in the way that Fred did? Were there other people that really stood out for you? I mean, obviously Rick was an early influence and a real connection for you, but are there other people that you were drawn to as well?
I can't say that. I think, everybody has their own little niche, and they're all my friends. A lot of the guys are, again, bigger is better, and we don't go there. I believe the I'm not trying to emulate the Europeans, but some of the European winemakers that are holding to their original style and character of their wines. This is something that I would strive to emulate.
Sure. And if I were to open a bottle of Stony Hill Chardonnay, what would I normally like to be eating it with? Given if it were at maturity.
Well, oddly enough, if you have an older Stony Hill, you can have that virtue with anything.
Yeah.
There's a lot of, as I said, a delicate power to it, and people have it with steak. But I like an older one with game bird, Poussin, with a rich sauce. Obviously, younger ones do better with lighter style fish and shellfish dishes. But our wines are pretty well balanced. They go with almost anything. I like to cook and I like to eat, but as far as wine pairing, I think it's I have a difficult time trying to pick. Every once in a while, you get something, you go, "Oh my God, that is exactly what you wanted." Other times, you just enjoy the wine with along with the food. Our style of wine is to go with food.
And you're someone who has had a long career, but you didn't start at the UCD model. You didn't go to Davis as maybe a younger generation might have coming up. Did you feel that in a way benefited or hamstrung you in any way?
Well, I would say yes, because it's nice to have. My son became a winemaker, and he went to he finished up at Cal Poly, and he asked me questions that I have no idea what he's talking about. And I've done some short courses at UC Davis, and sometimes I get lost listening to what Dr. What's his name had to say. But when you learn how to make wine hands-on, you learn that timing is everything, cleanliness is everything, and as long as you don't have problems, bacterial problems or microbiological problems, and you have good grapes, you're at an advantage because you use instinct and timing, and of course your taste to make your decisions, and it helps.
Besides 1973 and the vintages, for another reason, of the late 80s, are there other vintages that really stood out for you over the course of your career, either because they were a pain in the ass, or because they were super easy, or because they presented something that was unique?
There's been some years I like better than others, yes, and it depends. 1980 was it was a little too hot, and the acidities dropped for some reason. 90 the 91 vintage is very Chablis-like and tart and young, and the 01 is I think a long-lived wine. There's a few vintages in there that I just happen to like the character of it. Now, whether because maybe I left them on the lees a little too long or something, and the character comes out a little Monarchet-like or almost Meursault-like, but not really. I think that compared to our compatriots again in Europe, 1972 was a difficult vintage, and 2011 was difficult. Rains at the wrong time. that's a span of 40 years. If you can't take a couple of vintages that are difficult in 40 years, well, you're obviously in the wrong business. Our friends in Germany and in Italy and France, they have difficult seasons virtually every year. So, no, we're very lucky here. Very lucky.
And you also make a little Semillon and Gewürztraminer, is that true?
Yes, we do. We make a little Gewürztraminer. We make it, we used to call it Alsatian style, but it's our style. It's bone dry. We pick the grapes around 20% sugar, 21. So the alcohols are usually pretty low and the acidity, I keep it fairly high. But it seems to me the Alsatians are making heavier and heavier and sweeter wines. And I would say we're more like Austrian now, but still we're Stony Hill. The wine's very, it's slightly spicy, but very light and crisp. And it ages very well as well, but it's a great food wine. It goes well with spicy foods. And it happens to be my wife's favorite wine, so I enjoy making it.
I feel like when I talk to you, you have a lot of familiarity with the wines that you've made. Whereas sometimes when I talk to winemakers, they don't know necessarily the back vintages so well because maybe it was all sold and they don't still have some. But it sounds like you get a chance fairly frequently to open up something from the cellar.
A few bottles. We're generally sold out, but I keep a couple hidden here and there. Again, one of the reasons I was drawn to your show, I happen to like the name of your show.
Yeah, yeah.
So I quite often I do have a little taste of this or that.
And you grow Semillon?
We do have a small Semillon field, and we make sort of a unique wine out of it. We pick it, generally speaking, at the end of the season, and before the raccoons and the bees start to eat too much of it. And I lay it out on prune trays, and we use it dehydrate it for about a week and a half, depending on the sunshine that time of year. It's usually in September, October. And for instance, we probably pick the grapes at 24% sugar. We dehydrate them to 34% sugar. And then I try to stop the fermentation around 12 or 13% alcohol, which leaves about 10%. So it's a dessert wine with a fairly decent amount of acidity. So it's like a Sauternes, but without Botrytis.
And when Rick Forman went to start Forman Winery, as opposed to Sterling, when he did his own venture, he made a non-Malo Chardonnay. Do you think that was kind of an homage to what had happened at Stony Hill, or was that his own decision making, or is that just the kind of wine that he liked and maybe you also liked at that time? Or,
well, I think you're right. Yeah, I think, well, you know, Rick has tasted wines from Europe, and he likes balanced wines. And I think he might have experimented once or twice with a certain percentage of ML in some of his wines, his whites, and decided it didn't work. He happens to like, a good natural acidity. And obviously, in Europe, especially Burgundy, quite often they pick the grapes and there's so much acidity, they need to go through a little ML fermentation to balance the wines out. Whereas in California, we have an abundance of sugar, but not always a lot of acidity. So I'm of the opinion, and so was Fred and Peter, and all of us at Stony Hill, and I believe Rick, is if you have your natural acidity, why let somebody take it away from you. Of course, you can readjust it if you need to, but we just don't see that is the best for our style of wine. But there are some grapes that sometimes the Chardonnay grapes that don't have a whole lot of character to them, and a little ML fermentation gives them a little creaminess and it builds up some character. And so I think it's important for certain winemakers from certain vineyards to go ahead and do that. But for us, it does not work.
And what have you seen as the vines have gotten a bit older? You replanted, now they're about 20, 25 years old.
Mm-hmm.
Has there been a gradual shift in, say, the level of minerality is coming through in the wines?
I believe so. But a lot of people don't believe that to be true. But I think, especially us as dry farmers, the deeper the roots go, the healthier the vine is. And I think the more minerality you're able to pick up. Not every particular field. We have 17 different parcels at Stony Hill, and there's some have more minerality than others. Definitely, I think that I do feel that the vines pick up character from the from the deep roots.
And how does the family feel about how things have gone for the last 40 years? It's still family owned by the McRae's. Now Peter has his own daughter that works in the sales side with you. And so are they happy with the continuation of a legacy?
I believe they are. Whenever I see them, everybody's generally in a pretty good spirits.
They haven't asked you to leave the house yet?
No, not yet. No, it's been a good fit. You know, Peter and Melinda and Sarah. Sarah's only there a few days a week, and we have Courtney in the office. They're always in the office and always in good spirits. And I stop in every once in a while and check in, but you know, I'm generally out in the vineyard or in the winery. But no, we have fun. We work hard, but we make sure we have fun while we're at it.
If there was an opportunity to grow another grape variety, at a commercial level, what might that be? I mean, just hypothetically, what would you enjoy to make that maybe you don't get a chance to make now?
Well, I think I mentioned to you when I was in Montalcino, I was up there in Italy, in Tuscany, and I saw this beautiful red, deep red soil with Sangiovese Grosso, and I was thinking, wow, that would be perfect. But that'd be a labor of love, and it doesn't sell so well here. It'd be fun to try just a barrel or two. I happen to like the wine. Brunello's from that neck of the woods, but I think we could make a good one. We do make a little Syrah. We've been experimenting with Syrah. I'm not certain Syrah is perfect for our neck of the woods, but we're going to find out. I made a couple, and we've been enjoying them. I just made a couple of barrels. We haven't sold it, but
for just home use and mm-hmm. experiment.
Yes, but I would, we might put a little, a couple other varieties of Bordeaux blends up there. Maybe a little touch of Merlot in this lower part of the field, where it might not be warm enough for Cabernet, and maybe blend a little. And maybe Cabernet Franc, but I don't think so. I think we kind of like the Cabernet the way it is.
Because that's still a developing project in terms of it's fairly new, so
yes,
still
yes,
filling it
yes,
out.
Yes, exactly. The 2012, which is one we just made, is really like coming around now that the vines are, let's see, 8 years old. Is that right? They're really starting to show some more character and a little less of that which I do like. I like a little touch of that green that you get in the old school Cabernets. And we have a little touch of that characteristic. This one has a little less and a little more complex character. And so it's going to be fun.
Have your customers on the mailing list snapped up the cab? You know, usually you've been a white wine house. Is the red sold all the way through?
Oh, yes. No, it sold out in no time. You know, and, mostly because it, we only had a couple hundred cases. And we'll see. We've had nothing but great reviews and comments. Because, again, it's Stony Hill style. It's a restrained style, under 14% alcohol. I think it's a wine that you can probably lay down for quite a while as well, even though the vines were only 5 years old or six when we made the 09. It has a nice fruit character to it, just a little teeny bit of mountain tannins, a little dry tannins, and a lot of I call it black cherry fruit. And even though I did use some new wood in it, not a lot, but 30%, 40% new wood. The fruit's holding up very well, and it's been well received. We'll see. We have to see how it goes. But we have another 5 acres up there we could plant into Cabernet, which would give us 10 acres, which would make quite a few cases.
And are there restaurants that have worked with Stony Hill for a long period of time that if someone were thinking to themselves, hey, I've never had the opportunity to try an old bottle of Stony Hill. Are there restaurants that would come to mind for you that have been long-term clients that someone might go to in America to find such a wine?
Well, originally Trader Vic's would have been.
Yeah.
Vic de Bergeron was one of our first customers, and he loved our wine. But that's not really the same as it used to be, as you well know. Oddly enough, our friends at Press, brand new restaurant.
Yeah.
He's gone out and searched and found old cellars, and he has quite a few bottles of older Stony Hills. And I've had people call me up who had been there for dinner and said, "My God, how did you make this wine?" You know, and they found it at Press Restaurant. But
Kelly and Scott, the sommeliers.
Oh yes, they're great. Yes,
and Kelly's super nice.
Oh, they're great people, and they have great vision, and it's been great for Stony Hill as well. But you know, they're few and far between. But you know, most restaurants, again, we have a few people, you know, that are new sommeliers that are really into it, and they've been buying up our wine. The French Laundry, for instance, you know, they bought up a lot of our old Rieslings that I had stashed for myself, and they found them and we sold them, but they're little by little gone.
And have you found that younger sommeliers have come knocking more frequently and saying, "Hey, this is more along what I'm looking for"?
Well, yes. You know, again, it's difficult because a lot of them really enjoy the wines that are, say, 4 or 5 or 10 or even 20 years old. Like the Laundry, especially, they were looking for 20, 30-year-old Rieslings. And I believe they were part of their by the glass program.
So it's hard to really get them the quantity that they really would like.
No, you know, we just didn't have it. We had a few stashed that I kept just to see how the wines held up, and they were pretty interesting wines, I have to say. We had half a dozen cases of the 92 Riesling that I had hidden underneath a bunch of other cases, and somehow they found them and they're gone, but that's all right.
Do winemakers from other countries ever come to visit and see what you're doing in terms of being a benchmark, not just historic, but very continuous style of Riesling, Chardonnay, Gewürztraminer? I mean, did Germans ever come? Do Austrians ever
come? We've had a few people come in, yes, and but they didn't really know about us, generally speaking. But most people with a European palate like our wine. I'm not sure that's good or bad, but you know, we don't really hardly sell a lot of wine down in Los Angeles. I don't know why. We're just trying to get into the Los Angeles market. There's so much good food down there and great restaurants, but somehow we haven't fit in. And I'm not sure what the palate is down there, whether it's bigger or as better or something down there, but I'm not trying to downgrade Los Angeles. No offense, but
live in Los Angeles, you should give Mike a call.
Give us a try, yes, but generally, people with it that are even in New York, we do very well now because people have more European palates. Not that we're trying to be European; it just that's our sort of what our wines are closer to.
Do more and more young people who are into winemaking or want to be winemakers themselves show up to see what you're doing, or maybe a stage or internship?
We have a lot of new people interested in our style. Yes, absolutely.
And when did that start to? When did that start to change?
Just recently, because you know, in the last 5 or 6 years, again, most young people, and my son is included, are in the bigger is better, and quite often, you know, I can see where they're coming from because some, you know, those nice jammy, delicious Cabernets and Zinfandels. They're a lot of fun. They're delicious. But sometimes, you know, I just don't think the people who like that wine so much are very serious about food and wine. They're just enjoying the experience of tasting the wine.
And
I might be wrong.
No. What advice did you give to your own son when he said to you, "Hey, Dad, I want to be like you. I want to be a winemaker"? What'd you tell him?
It was great. Yeah, why not? You know, he went to college for a couple of years and wasn't sure what he was up to, and somehow he got the bug, and I was glad for him. He's done really well. He's a winemaker here in Santa Elena now. He does consulting with Bob Pepe's firm.
Okay, sure.
So he's all over the place. So he's seeing a lot of vineyards, a lot of different styles of wine. And Bob's a good winemaker. He makes to me makes civilized wines.
Sure. Would you say it's gotten harder or easier to break into the winemaking trade in California over the last 40 years?
Well, over the last 4 years, maybe it's a little easier, but the last 15 years, it was very difficult. A lot of people graduating from Davis looking for jobs. Jobs were, the economy kind of slowed, and people weren't rehiring so much. And a lot of winemakers have been sticking with what they've been doing for a period of time.
People like yourself.
Yes. Well, I'm not going anywhere anytime soon, as I said. But I was very lucky back in the day that there were only a handful of wineries in my town in Sonoma, and not many more here. And that's what moved me from Sonoma to here, the up and coming wine business back in the early 70s. So I was very lucky to be at the right place at the right time and have the right teachers.
And you knew kind of right away that was for the long term. I mean, did you ever think to yourself, maybe in 10 years I'll leave and try something else? Or
I don't think I ever thought about doing something else. It was having so much fun.
Yeah.
And it was hard work when I first started. I pruned the whole ranch and I did all the cultivating and tractor work and sulfuring and all that. And I loved it. Go figure. And I was a new father at the time, and I still live on the property. So I get up in the morning, have a cup of coffee, and I watch the Today Show. No offense to the poor people that have to do this, but you're watching the commute and saying, don't take 680 today. And I get on my, I walk out the door and I'm at work. So I do take that for granted. But
do you think that, just in a practical sense, gave you a big advantage in the sense that you didn't have to ever leave the vineyard? I mean, you're right there. You never had to not know you always knew what was going on with it because it was right outside.
I think it helped a little bit, but it was definitely an advantage personally. I could do whatever I could work. I worked at night sometimes. I'd go out and sulfur in the middle of the night. And if I wanted to, I could sleep in if I wanted to. And I have lunch with my wife every day and my family. It was just mostly a personal benefit.
And if there was a young guy making a wine today, sometimes we hear about people experimenting with different grape varieties or areas that are less fashionable, and they're not getting a lot of market traction, yet. Maybe they will in the future. Who knows? What kind of advice would you give to someone who maybe wasn't popular in the market today, but maybe could be tomorrow?
Well, I believe you should stick with what you like, and stick with it. It's difficult though, because there's a lot of really good wine out there, and if you don't get a break or the right hype, or somebody that reads about it or tastes the wine and gives it a high rating, which doesn't seem quite fair in a lot of ways, but don't change your style. It's going to be you. If it doesn't work, you better look for something else.
What do you think about the explosion of options on the supermarket shelf in terms of wine? It just seems like there's so much more than would have been available, not just when Fred got started, but when you got started. What's that seem like now compared to how it used to be?
Well, I think it's fine. It's America. Only the strong survive. I like the American way. If you can't make it, move on. There's a lot of choices. You're right, and sometimes I have a hard time making a decision myself. Because this certain time of year, I'll go out and buy. I like to buy a couple cases of bubbly for Christmas time, and there's an awful lot of price differences and obviously choices. It's tough. But generally speaking, I'll buy a bottle and try it. That'll work. And sometimes it doesn't. Don't go back.
Are there wines that you found over the years that you particularly enjoy? Certain chateau or brand names that you want to feel comfortable mentioning that you like at home?
Well, of course, there's my favorite wine would be Latour, Chateau Latour.
Sure.
I've been lucky enough to taste the great vintages going back to the turn of the century. But I can't afford them. but I, generally speaking, I would because I'm on a winemaker salary, I drink a lot of Italian reds and Southern France reds. Zinfandel's from Sonoma County, and some of the whites from Sonoma County as well, more northern Sonoma County. Sorry, buddies, but I don't drink a whole lot of Napa Valley wines.
So it feels like a strange question to ask for a winery that has been known for continuity for 40 years, but what is going to happen? What is going to be new at Stony Hill?
Well, I believe the winemaking style and the vineyards are going to keep being, will be the same. But now we have Sarah McRae on board. She's we've started a wine club, and we have some friends that are part of a public relations program. So we're just trying to make sure everybody knows we're still there. And Peter and Melinda are, do a lot of entertaining at the winery, tours and tastings, and we do a few dinners for friends, and we do a wine club party a couple times a year. So, Sarah has a lot of new ideas, and it's great to have a young blood, and she seems to be having a good time. So we're going to just keep doing what we're doing.
Cheers. Mike Cellini, he's been sticking to what he knows best for 40 years as the winemaker at Stony Hill Vineyards. Thank you, sir.
It's a pleasure.
The exclusive sponsor of I'll Drink to That is 750, a powerful and easy-to-use online search tool for wholesale buyers of wine and spirits in New York and New Jersey. 750 incorporates over 100 distributor portfolios and a number of unique features that make the lives of buyers simpler and more productive. I'll Drink to That is recorded with the great assistance of executive producer Matt Ducker, and also with the great help of our guests and listeners. Thank you for joining us. You can catch us online, alldrinktothatpod.com, no apostrophe, alldrinktothatpod.com, or on Twitter at drinktothatpod. And you can find us on iTunes. You should subscribe. Tell us what you think in a review. Subscribe on iTunes. Thank you for listening.